Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the TL Type S with a 286-horsepower V6 and real-time traffic alerts. Learn more at Acura.com.
From KQED Public Radio, this is the California Report. Good morning, I'm Rachel Miro. If you turn on the TV this weekend, there's a good chance you'll spot an ad from the governor urging voters to support his gambling compacts. The proposed deals would let four Indian tribes in Riverside and San Diego add 17,000 slot machines to the 8,000 they have now. In exchange, the state would get 15% to 25% of the take from the additional slots. Lawmakers approved the deals, but rival tribes and racetrack operators gathered enough signatures to put the question to voters on the February 5th ballot. Federal officials are considering whether to force the San Diego School District to give back $3 million. U.S. auditors say the district took money intended to help low-income students and spent it on early retirement bonuses for teachers instead. Parent activist Sally Smith says she's glad federal officials uncovered the issue.
The findings just reaffirm the concerns that I have about my children's high school. The district is failing in its responsibility to monitor these funds at the school level.
State education officials say San Diego did nothing wrong. The dispute turns on the question of whether those bonuses are a fringe benefit, which would be legal, or mass severance pay for early retirees. Domestic partners in California might want to crack open some bubbly for the second time this week. The state Supreme Court turned down an appeal yesterday, and the upshot is registered domestic partners now have the right to the same property tax breaks husbands and wives enjoy under state law. Under Proposition 13, counties get to reassess real estate at full market value if it's sold or changes ownership. The prop was fuzzy on change of ownership, and although the State Board of Equalization granted domestic partners equal rights on this issue back in 2003, several county assessors challenged the tax break in court. It's a while yet before the Oscars, but the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences has already released a short list of the 15 feature-length documentary films that have a shot at winning the coveted statuette. The shortlist will be narrowed down to five before the big night, but for now at least, California is well represented in the pack, and we've decided to take a closer look at the docs with ties to the Golden State. Today we focus on No End in Sight, a review of America's performance in Iraq from the perspective of people involved in the war and the reconstruction effort. Charles Ferguson directed No End in Sight.
In the space of 100 minutes, I believe the film conveys most of the important things about what happened in Iraq and what happened in Washington, D.C. that led Iraq to be in the condition that it's in now.
At this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger.
So, how do you go about telling such a complicated story inside of 100 minutes?
With difficulty. There were two editors, and they produced a 5.5-hour long assembly, as it's called in the film business, of what they thought was the most promising footage, and we went from there. We eliminated the unnecessary and improved the essential, and in the end, I think we came out with a very good result.
It's a very comprehensive story. The film lays out example after example where somebody on the ground, somebody who speaks Arabic, somebody with military experience suggests a course of action only to be ignored.
They needed to get over there because there were people waiting on them and on one man in particular to show up so he could make decisions and get the ball rolling.
Colonel Paul Hughes complains that Walter Slocum, head of the DOD advisory team in charge of dealing with the Iraqi military, wanted to work out of Washington, D.C. Slocum talked to you, but there were so many people who didn't. How do you go about telling a history where the people who are making the big decisions don't want to talk?
Well, sometimes that was difficult, and there are a few significant things that we still don't know about why there was nothing done about the looting in April of 2003. certain aspects of U.S. occupation policy in 2003-2004 for the reasons that you mentioned. But most of the time when those large decisions were being made, there was somebody else in the room or somebody who was on the receiving end of the order, or there's a document, and it's been possible to reconstruct most of the important decisions and who made them.
Were you surprised by anything that you found out in the process of making this film?
If somebody had told me at the outset that, for example, a 22-year-old college graduate would be placed in charge of Baghdad traffic planning, or that for the first 2 or 3 months of the occupation, most people administering the occupation would not have telephones, email, or internet access, I would have said, that's crazy. That couldn't possibly happen. This is the United States government, you know. But, in fact, those things and many more were true.
Some of the footage you play shows reporters pushing politicians to make assessments about Iraq, which would later be taken as a given, even as those politicians demurred at the time. For example, Donald Rumsfeld ridicules reporters for their choice of words, and one reporter suggests the word quagmire.
I have since gone to the dictionary, and I have looked up several things, one of which I can't immediately recapture, but one was guerrilla war, another was insurgency, another was unconventional war. Pardon me?
Quagmire.
No, that's someone else's business, quagmires. I don't do quagmires.
What kind of conversations do you hope this documentary will spark?
In the longer term, I'm sure the United States will go to war again, and I hope the film conveys the importance of going to war intelligently and carefully and with adequate thought and preparation. But I think it's important to say that the film is not just about history. The question of Iraq is not over. Iraq will be with us for a while.
The list of the final five Oscar contenders will be revealed later this month. You can find out more about No End in Sight and check out a trailer on our website, californiareport.org. That's the California Report for Friday, January 4th, a production of KQED Public Radio. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, with additional engineering from Seal Muller and Jim Bennett. Our director is Rory Gallagher. Our interns are June Stinson, Ali Tabatabai, and Leanne Lucetta. Our senior editor is Pat Flynn. The producers are Victoria Malione and Erica Kelly. Kat Snow is the senior producer this week. Our news director is Bruce Kuhn. I'm Rachel Miro. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the Wesley Foundation for coverage of immigration issues throughout California.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals, institutions, and advisors reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.